We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Cue the organ. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Hey. Pleasure to be with you on this fine, exciting day. It's Thursday. November 13th. Ooh, Thursday the 13th. Don't walk under a cat. Ooh. Oh, that's Friday. I'm sorry. Never mind. Walk under a cat. I don't care. Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the Pod O'Cast. That's the Irish version of the show, Pod O'Cast, where we boil everything and then we eat it. I'm an ion. I'm made up of ions. I am in day three, the final day of my detoxification situation. The detoxification situation. Quick story, not to bore you again, because I've said it like 2,000 times. I was watching the Dr. Oz, Who is a Whore show. That's the entire title of the program, Dr. Oz, Who is a Whore. And he whores himself out to sell things pharmaceutically and product-wise. He says on his show, oh, if you take coffee beans and shove them up your ass, you'll lose 20 pounds. And all of a sudden, everybody's buying coffee beans. You can't buy coffee beans anymore. And everybody's going to the doctor with coffee bean ass sores. Ron, do you have ass sores? Yes, I do. I admit I have ass sores. It's a condition that Dr. Oz the whore created. Dr. Oz says, oh, if you eat dinkleberries, which is some kind of brown little berry that you find in the Himalayas, if you eat dinkleberries, you will be healthy and live until you're 200 and all of a sudden, you can't find a dinkleberry anywhere. Well, you know, actually you can. No, the dinkleberries fly off the shelf, and there's no more dinkleberries. Excuse me, do you have dinkleberries? Well, they're usually in the dinkleberry section, but I don't see any. They must be flying off the shelf. Oh, it's not another one of Dr. Oz the whore things, is it? Yes, it is. Yes, last month, Dr. Oz the whore said that prunes keep you regular, and now we can't keep enough prunes on the shelf. We have no prunes. The prunes are gone. No prunes. Ain't no prunes going on. Out of prunes. We're pruneless. No prunes. Yes, we have no prunes. That's Dr. Oz the whore. That's what he does. He whores out products. He claims that he makes no money off of it, gets no kickbacks. Yeah. Yeah, like, I believe that, Dr. Oz the whore. Helmet. It's his name. His first name is Helmet. Yeah, that's something you put on your head. Anyway, this is day three of my detoxification. I'm not an alcoholic or anything. I'm just telling you. I'm not in a detox program. I'm not going to the Betty Ford Clinic in order to learn what Betty Ford was all about. No, this is Dr. Oz the whore presented this on his television show and said for 3 days, you're going to eat a broth or drink a broth, whatever, that I will tell you. It's got ginger root in it and kale, and it's got kale and ginger root and white radish root and turnips and dried seaweed and cabbage and fresh ginger and carrots and squash and an onion and the eye of a newt and a skinny virgin. And the toenails of an alligator with herpes, and you put it all into the broth, and you drink the broth, and you do this every day, Ron, and all you can eat is chicken or salmon, and no sauce on it, nothing like that, maybe a little broccoli, maybe half a cup of brown rice, and that's it, and a shake made of raspberries and blueberries and dinkleberries and almond milk, and that's all you can have. That's it, baby. And for 3 days, you drink this, and you're going to lose 5 pounds guaranteed. That's what Dr. Oz the whore said. And to be honest with you, when I drink that freaking broth, I'm on the toilet within 2 minutes. That does work. You also put flaxseed in the food, and that also makes you go to the bathroom continually. So, yeah, it really, you do clean out your body. There's no question about that. I mean, I could have just chocked a box of chocolate X-Lax, and they're probably done the same thing, but nonetheless. Have I lost the weight? Ladies and gentlemen, here is the reveal. I've got another day to go. I've got to get through this day. Tomorrow morning, I can eat like normal food. By the way, I did cheat a little bit, but I don't think it's cheating. We did our podcast show yesterday from Charlie's Restaurant in Brockton, and I felt like I had to have something. I can't just order a glass of water and look like some kind of putsy schmuck. So I ordered egg whites, 2 egg whites, and that was it. So I think I'm all right. Anyway, I weighed in at 217.6 when I started the day Tuesday morning. And now it is Thursday morning, 2 days later, and I'm down to 215.8. So I've lost 2 pounds. So I've got 3 pounds to go. So this better be one hell of a miraculous poundage day. I don't know. I'm not sure about this, but we'll see. And on tomorrow's podcast, I'll announce the final results and get back to my normal life and have a damn drink again. God, very enjoyable. I've had no toxins whatsoever. Nothing has been put in my body of any consequence. Not even a woman. I have not even had sex, man. I am so detoxified that I am crawling the walls, but I'm feeling good. I got to tell you, I'm feeling good. I have energy. I'm feeling all right, but I can't go on like this. I can't live like this. This is ridiculous. It is absurd. And yesterday, and I did it in an Elizabethan kind of manner yesterday when I was talking about it, apparently, like a Shakespearean play. And I am taking the detox, young Campeculus. And I will drink the broth, and my bowels shall move. And I thought, oh my God, my bowels shall move. What a wonderful title for a book. And I suggested that John Shanahan, who does all the stuff on this podcast radio, he's the voice of this thing. It's really creative. And I said, man, we should write a book. And then, God, I didn't realize we already had. Ladies and gentlemen, this is actually from the audiobook series, My Bowels Shall Move by John Shanahan and Ron Van Dam.
This is an excerpt from the new novel, My Bowels Shall Move, by Ron Van Dam and John Shanahan, read by Mr. Shanahan. Lydia considered the bowl on the table. It was deep green, ceramic, glinting slightly in the cool morning light coming in through the kitchen window. Inside were small brown pellets, flecked with something also brown and a little green. "What is it?" she asked. Tom smiled. She loved that smile. It was reassuring but not condescending, and in it was the remnant glow of their passionate lovemaking from the night before. "It's called All Bran," he said, really packed with fiber. He shrugged. "Doesn't taste all that great, but..." "This isn't just about taste, Lydia." "I understand," she said. He sat across from her and pulled the bowl a little toward him. His deep brown eyes were still cloudy with sleep. "See, I've also sprinkled it with some flaxseed. You won't even taste it, but it will do a lot of the work. Plus, your apple juice has psyllium husk in it. In case you wondered why it might have tasted a little grainy, that stuff's the real deal." "Tom, are you sure?" she began, but his smile stopped her. She loved that smile. "Listen to me, Lydia. I've been eating like this for a long time, even before we met. I don't tell people about it much. It's not the sort of thing you bring up in conversation. But when someone you care about is having, well, these kinds of issues..." "Oh, Tom," she burst out, "don't say it like that. It sounds like I have some kind of psychological problem. I don't have issues. I'm... Go on, Tom said. You can say it, Lydia. You can say it to me. Her voice was a small, weak whisper, but she needed to speak the words, to give herself the strength of truth. I am constipated, she said. This has been an excerpt from the new novel My Bowels Shall Move by Ron Van Dam and John Shanahan, available spring 2015.
Oh my God, that is so beautiful. Oh. We're in talks to make it a Lifetime movie. I know, it's that pretty. This detox adventure has been more than a simple 3 days of experimenting with my bowels. It's been a journey. John, thank you for reading that excerpt. The book will be released shortly. It is targeted for the spring of 2015. Copies are already circulating. It is larger than the both of us. So is this guy that we know. But that's not the point. I don't think that before in history that the condition of the bowels has been as dramatic nor as significant. So I thank you, John. And it was crazy, man. John and I wrote that thing a couple of months ago. We rented a cabin in Vermont because we like to be close to syrup. And also someone said, why don't you saps write a book? And we looked at each other and said, I know we were going to do it. I know we were going to do this. So we rented a cabin and we got a couple of call girls and we never ended up writing the book there. We did it down at International House of Pancakes because we wanted to keep that syrup feel. You know what I'm saying? And we wrote the book in a very short period of time, but it was like a revelation. It just came to us. It just came to us all over the place. It was disgusting, but we wrote the thing, and hopefully, see, John is like, you know, we're 50-50 partners on the book, and I can't do this myself. He has to sign off on half of everything. So, hopefully he'll be doing this again, and he has the rights to the audiobook, so I can't, you know, he has to. I know. I agree to it and stuff, but I get certain rights too. I get 60% of the t-shirt sales. So, I'm good. Coming up later in the program, Uncle John will be joining us. Yes, it's your Uncle John. It's a surprise, you haven't seen him in years. He's in the back. Uncle John, bathroom reader. Many of us are familiar with the series of books that have been around for decades and decades and decades. And it just keeps on going, and he's released another version, and he's released another virgin. So we're going to speak to Uncle John himself coming up on this particular episode of the Ron Van Dam Show. I love to play this thing. Ladies and gentlemen, and now a word from the newly elected governor of Massachusetts.
I am Tiffany Back, co-chair of MassIEPAC, and MassIEPAC approves and paid for this message.
In Charlie Baker's Massachusetts, who loses? We do. As CEO Charlie Baker laid off workers in Massachusetts and outsourced jobs that went to India. Baker even accepted the Outsourcing Excellence Award for a deal that shipped jobs overseas, while tripling his own salary to $1.7 million a year. If Charlie Baker wins, the rest of us lose.
Well, he won. Oops. Oh, well, what you gonna do? Bad boys, bad boys. He's going to be fine. These are campaign ads, and we always make up stuff because it's America, and the only way that you can win an election is to not be wonderful yourself, but to make the other person look more stupid than you are. That's how we do things in this country. Yes, I want to be president for the good of this country. Oh, is that why? Well, no, I actually want to be president to destroy the other party and to make that guy look like an idiot and make sure he's a loser. Oh, that's the reason. Congratulations. I don't want to get into it right now, but I am such a proponent of, not legalizing marijuana, of a campaign finance reform or whatever the fuck that is. I mean, I'm not even talking about, I'm sorry, did I say that is by mistake? I shouldn't have cursed, and I really do apologize for that because there are people listening who don't like cursing, and I apologize for that. Oh no, not this one.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it.
No,
too.
Don't say it.
But sometimes he says bad words.
She said it. Oh my God. I really don't. Sometimes, but not usually. I really usually don't. Anyway, I believe that each candidate for whatever office it is, I don't care where your office is, whether it be president or mayor of a small town or city or anything in between, you are given a certain amount of money, like maybe $5,000. Maybe you're given that. You can't put any of your own money into it because I don't want people sitting in places of responsibility and political offices simply because they have a lot of money and were able to run television ads and their opponent who doesn't have money couldn't do it. So we're just electing people who have a lot of money and who have good commercials. I mean, seriously, that's not what this country is supposed to be about. That's what it is about, but it's not what it's supposed to be about. So I am saying each candidate gets the same amount of money and you spend it. And when you're done spending it, you can't do no more. You can't put any other money into it. You can't raise money from large corporations where if you won that seat, you'd be able to help this large corporation through legislation. None of that crap anymore. I mean, that is just, I seriously can't believe how crooked, how corrupt this system really is when you look at it that way. And that's what really happens. You have lobby groups that go to Washington and they take these senators and House of Representative people and they take them out playing golf. They buy them dinner and stuff. And that's allowed. I mean, seriously, you shouldn't be able to. They should be like judges. You shouldn't be able to influence them. And if you try to, you should be arrested. You can't take money from someone that can benefit from your election. Yes, I said election. As opposed to erection. Well, you shouldn't take money from people who can benefit from your erection either, which would be whores and prostitutes, like Dr. Oz and other people. Whores and prostitutes benefit from your erection. So is your girlfriend, sometimes. Well, she says she does, but she really doesn't. You know that. Do you think every woman is actually enthralled every time you have sex with them? Get a life, mister. Get a plant, mister. Come on. Grow a pair. I hate that. I can't stand that phrase, grow a pair. Oh, man.
Honey barbecue sauce, along with boneless wings, house-made chips, and Boston's best sweet potato fries.
Guys, it's time to man up, grow a pair, and eat what you want to eat.
The Boston Burger Company, Davis Square, Somerville, and Boylston Street, Boston.
Oh, my God. Did you ever go to a landscaper and say, yes, can I help you? Would you like to purchase a tree? No, I actually want to grow a pair. A pair of what? Apparently, I don't have any testicles or any balls. I want to grow a pair. Do you have any, like, any miracle grow or anything like that that can sprinkle on my balls? Wow, man. Get out of my nursery. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was a landscaping place. No, it's a nursery school, man. Get out of here. Seriously. You can't talk like that around here. Not within 50 feet. That or you can't sell drugs under 50 feet. I'm not sure which, but just get out of here. Grow a pair, why don't you? And man up. What? Man up? What the hell does that mean? Man up. Man up what? What are you talking about, man up? What does that mean? Why don't you throw me under the bus? Look, here comes a bus now. Throw me under it. All these expressions, I don't understand. All right, fine. Let's speak to Uncle John, bathroom reader. I love this thing because I have attention deficit disorder, which would be ADD, and sometimes I have SUBTRACT. Sometimes I'm a mathematical wonder in the medical field, and I can't pay attention to anything for any extended period of time. I don't think it's because my brain can't handle it. I think it's because I legitimately am not interested and seriously don't care. I have a very low tolerance for caring about stuff. I care for people if they pay me, but otherwise, no. And that's, I think, what it is. I just have absolutely no interest. I totally don't have an interest. Hi, Ron. How are you today? You know, yesterday I went to the... You know, I'm at work. You know, we're actually planning a physical where we build this large. I don't, seriously. You're wasting your breath on me. I'm standing here because you're talking to me, but I don't give a at all about you or what you're doing. It's significant to you, maybe some of your family members, but not even all of them. Me. What the hell do you think I care? You are so in yourself that you think that I care about you? I don't. I don't even know why you're listening to my podcast, to be honest with you. What do you care? Because I'm not talking about me. Well, not all the time. Kind of am right now, though. I'm just thinking maybe you connect with me. Maybe you legitimately don't care. If you're a business guy, you work in a company, we're going to have a meeting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you go into a boardroom, and that's a proper name for that room, by the way, and you sit down, and some guy with a tie on, he says, you know, sales must increase. You know, we take the graph, and if we turn it upside down, then sales are going up, but they're not because they're actually going down, and you're just sitting there, and you're going, what the hell do I care, man? Give me my paycheck and leave me alone, man. Give me my can of Coke and put me in my cubicle and just leave me alone. All right. So as I am totally anal, Uncle John and his bathroom reader, I learned so much. They're little stories. They're funny. They're entertaining. They're historical. They're hysterical. Let's speak to Uncle John. Let me raise him here on the line. He's calling in here. Gordon Javna joins us now. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Ron.
I call you Garden by mistake. So
that's okay. I've been called worse. At least Garden is a pretty place.
Yeah, I guess.
I've been called some bad things. In fact, yesterday somebody called me.
Really? They called you Garden yesterday? That's pretty cool.
No, they just called me some bad things.
Oh, okay. I got
somebody called me.
Well, people know you better as Uncle John, I guess.
Some people do.
Yeah.
My readers do, yeah.
Your readers do. Uncle John's Bathroom Reader. It's been around, actually, before the internet, it was used as the most valuable source of information.
I've had, I met some people a couple of years ago who are puzzle constructors. They write puzzles that appear in the New York Times and other place, and they told me just what you said before the internet. Yeah. They used Uncle John's Bathroom Reader as a reference source, which made me cringe a little bit because if we didn't get it right, if we made a mistake, and they were using our information to construct crossword puzzles, but
well,
water under the bridge.
I mean, to me, there are like three major publications in the world. There's the Bible. The annual reprinting of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which I don't know if they do anymore, and then there's
they do not,
and then there's Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, which many countries that had communism now don't have anymore because of your book. So I appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a major source. every time I think I've read it all, and how could they possibly put out another edition, there's another one.
You know, Ron, I feel exactly the same way because I... because in preparing for this interview, mm-hmm. so when I finish a book, and I finish them in, you know, summertime-ish, and when I finish a book, I really don't want to look back at it. I really have to just keep going on to the next thing because I've had it with this thing. I spend so much time with these books that I really need a break, and I never want to look at them again. And then in preparing for an interview like this, I have to go back and peruse the book, pick out articles, and I always go, wow, there's some good stuff in this book.
This is not a bad book after all.
It's not bad. It's good stuff. I mean, okay, so this book has stories about how reality TV is faked.
Good.
Called The Harsh Reality of Reality TV.
Good.
That's fun.
Good.
We have Gone with the Sequels, which is about how the family of Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind, she died in a car accident, or she was hit by a car in 1949.
Really?
And yeah, she was only 49 years old, and she didn't have any children, but she had nieces and nephews, and they inherited the proceeds, you know, of her estate. And they decided in the 1970s, to just after it was 50 years old, because it was written in the 1930s, they decided to do a sequel, to commission a sequel. And the reason, and I was wondering, why would they bother? They were making, you know, I mean, the movie star, they were going to, the copyright was about to expire, and they were afraid they were going to lose control of the characters. So they commissioned a sequel which sold 6 million copies.
Oh.
It was called Scarlet. It sold 6 million copies, which is in the book world is like off the charts. You know, we hear platinum, you know, double platinum albums in music, but not in books. They don't sell that many.
No, they don't.
With the exception of some bestsellers.
Right, like the
best. So anyway, that's a cool story. And
that's very cool.
And we have stories about, we also have stories about futurists. We have stories about taxidermy. You know, taxidermy is a kind of a fun new fad. I guess it was not fun for the animals, but it's fun for collecting. We have stories about celebrities who collect taxidermy, and there's stories about how the White House before there was the White House. Where did the president live? Turns out there were five buildings in which were either built for the federal mansion or the places, houses in which Washington lived. And we've read about how they got there and also what happened to them afterwards. Kind of interesting. One of them in New York City is the neighborhood, Cherry Street. That's the first place that Washington lived when he was...
Cherry Street.
After he was elected president. Cherry.
Interesting.
Yeah. Cherry Street. Yeah. And that street is no longer there. They tore down everything. It after Washington, you know, 100 years after Washington, it had devolved into, you know, a seedy neighborhood with brothels and bars there. And and later they tore it down to build the Manhattan Bridge.
Oh my God.
So the only marker there is for this house is a memorial plaque, which is on one of the piers for the bridge. But you can't even see it because after 9/11, they put barricades around major structures, and so you can't even see the plaque anymore.
You know what I found fascinating is that with the Gone in the Wind thing, she died when she was 49 in 1949. Can you imagine being born in 1900 or in 2000, and that it's such a clean record of your age?
Yeah,
it's what. What a marvelous thing.
Yeah,
it'd be wonderful.
It makes you, when you see that somebody's 49 in 1949, it makes you think, is this a typo?
Yeah, because it's just too perfect. It's too perfect.
So unusual, yeah.
It's
Well, my grandfather was born in 1899.
That's close.
And close, but just to remember how old he was, I always had to remember it was the year minus one or plus one.
Yeah, but see, then there's math involved, and that's where it screws me
up.
And, you know, I don't know if I'm like plus one, minus one. I can't figure that out. Can I ask you? Let me ask you a question, Garden. Are you married?
Yes.
Okay, Because I was thinking, if you weren't, what a great pickup line you've got. Like, you would be so engaging to any woman would be sitting there and go, you know, I know about the Cherry Street before the Manhattan Bridge. And you go, oh, my God, I've got to have sex with you.
Well, I don't think stories about Cherry Street are particularly aphrodisiac.
That's where you're missing.
And in fact, I would even tell you my wife is so sick of hearing these stories.
I would assume so. So how do you keep all this stuff? I mean, obviously you have a team of people. As I remember from our last interview, not a huge team of people necessarily. But a team.
No, there's six of us.
Yeah, that's not
six
a lot.
Six of us all together.
It's not a lot for this amount of information. Have you ever calculated, I think I asked you this before, have you calculated how many pieces of information you've actually compounded together?
But we have over 40,000 pages of material that we've produced. So, I don't know, if you figured
maybe 10
facts per page, 400,000,
that's
half
a
million, something like that.
That's a lot. And apparently, from your description, you know every single one of them.
Yeah, well, that ain't true.
And you also... go ahead.
I have trouble remembering what's in the latest book. You know, when we... Yeah, I would say 15 years ago, yes, I remembered everything, but we just keep adding to the list. But there's some great stuff to know. I always worry that we're going to run out of things to write about.
It's a huge world. It's a huge world, and there's a lot of trivia stuff in it that people really don't care about. And then when you write about it, they go, well, that's actually interesting. How many years has how many years have you been in publication?
Well, this is our 27th year.
So you're older than 27.
And in book year, I said 6 million copies of a book is off the charts in book years. So is 27 years for a series. That's really unusual. There are very few. You mentioned the Bible. That's one.
Yeah.
But you know, like Guinness World Records or Ripley's or Dummies books, you know, but there aren't that many that have been around this long.
Well, Friday the 13th, part 75,000 is
there you go.
Probably the only runner-up you've got. What's the most interesting piece of information that any of your writers or yourself ever came to you with and you went, that is like unbelievable phenomenal that ever happened?
You know, they all, I hate to say it this way, right. But most of them have to be that. They have to wow me off the charts to get my interest to begin with, because I have seen so much, so many stories, that if they're not really a wower, then I reject them. There's a great story in this book about Jean Seberg. She was an actress in the 60s, in the 50s and 60s, 70s. She was discovered by a producer named or a director named Otto Preminger for a movie. She was the lead in his movie called Saint Joan, and that was in the late 50s. And she was 19 years old, and she was in a few other movies, Paint Your Wagon, and some other movies. Well, somebody found a story. One of my writers found a story about her. In the early 1970s, an item appeared in a gossip column in Los Angeles, saying that she was pregnant and her and the father of her baby was a member of the Black Panthers.
Oh,
and a few months later, it appeared in the same. It was reported as a rumor.
Uh-huh.
A few months later, it was reprinted in Newsweek magazine as fact.
Oh.
And they even mentioned who they said the father was. Well, it was not true. She was married, and she was pregnant, but the baby was not out of wedlock.
Right.
But she was so upset that the day the article came out, she miscarried, and subsequently, she. committed suicide.
Oh, my
God. Broke up her marriage, and then she committed suicide, and then her ex-husband committed suicide.
Oh, my.
And then it turned out, through the Freedom of Information Act, that it was discovered that it was a smear campaign by the FBI, by Hoover, J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, because she had once donated money to the Black Panthers. They targeted her, and
wow.
Oh my God, what a story.
It's
a heartbreaking story.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's one of those things. When I read it, I went, oh my God, how did I never hear this story before? And it's really a heartbreaker.
So for those of you that may not be familiar, it's Uncle John's Bathroom Reader. It's got thousands of other titles to it because they're always coming up with something different, but it's that. And it's like what you may recall as the Reader's Digest, only it's like really fun stuff, except for the Seberg story. And it's just great. Nothing's that long that you can't just quickly sit there for like a short little shit and it's all, you've read the story. It's really, I'm sorry, now you can't replay this. But it's just the greatest literary piece in the world. Buy a copy if you never have. If you have, then you're going to buy it anyway. And is there a website where we can follow you?
Sure, bathroomreader.com. They make it easy for me to remember. If it was anything complicated, I probably wouldn't remember it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Gordon, or as I fondly call you, Garden. And we'll talk to you the next time it comes out. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye. A group called The Misses. We interviewed them last week. It's five girls in their 20s and early 30s, and they write their own songs. It's pretty cool. Most of these girls are married, that's why they call them the Misses, and they write songs about women's empowerment and how women should feel good about themselves and have good positive images in this world, and very talented girls and very attractive. So cool, man. So cool. Coming up on tomorrow's program, I believe, on Friday, we should be joined by Rudy Maxima, who did a travel series there on Travel Channel and others. He travels all throughout the world with his camera crew. It was the first real full HD travel show ever. It was called Smart Travels with Rudy Maxima. And he should be joining us tomorrow to take us mentally all over the world and talk about traveling to countries. I tell you, it's very different now. I tell you. It's very different now when you travel. You got to get to the airport 3 hours ahead of time. You have to, you can't eat on a plane. You know, for domestic flights in the United States, they don't even give you peanuts anymore. No, nothing. They give you nothing. International flights, yeah, they'll give you food and drinks, I'll bet. I mean, you can buy stuff on a plane, but they won't give it to you, like, gratis or anything. And on many airlines, if you have a suitcase, they charge you to bring a suitcase on. Excuse me, what do you want me to do? Like, show up at a hotel in my underpants? I mean, like, well, of course I got a suitcase, and I got to pay for it, too. I mean, they just slip this by the American public because they all do it pretty much. I mean, it's just things they get away with, man. They slip by us. We don't even realize it's happening. They just slip it by us. I don't know. I'm detoxing. I have no idea what I'm talking about. You have to really cut me some slack, man. Man, you got to cut me some slack. Hey, thank you so much for joining me today. You've just been wonderful, as you usually are. You're so nice to me. Really, really nice. Yeah. Did you enjoy your Veterans Day there on Tuesday? I mean, I don't enjoy it. It's not like you go out and you have a picnic or anything. I mean, I really don't know. But you had a day off, right? So not only do we thank these men and women for defending our country and keeping us free and supposedly safe, but we also, in honor of you, we take the day off. We are, I'm not working. I mean, yeah. You fought for our country, and as a result, I'm not working. I'm not going to work today. I'm not going to work. I got a call from my, I want to get this proper. Not the trash people, the sanitation, the rubbish removal people. I got a call on Tuesday at my house, and it was a robocall. A robo called me, and I can't say robot. I got to say robo. And it was from my sanitation pickup people, and they said, we'll be picking up your rubbish on Veterans Day, even though it's a holiday. And I said to myself, wow. Nothing stops you. Nothing stops you people from picking up rubbish. I'm telling you, you're unstoppable. You should be delivering mail because you are unstoppable. By the way, if my mailman is listening to this podcast, and you know what? Here's the freaky thing, man. This has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. All right, if my mailman is listening, something's going on at the post office, man. My neighbors are getting my mail all of a sudden. And I'm getting their mail, and I'm like now confused as to who I legally am. So please, if you guys could just like sort the mail better, I don't know if alcohol is involved. I'm just saying. Here's the scary part. I did radio. Ron, how many times are you going to tell people you did broadcast radio for over 20? How many times are you going to tell them that? I don't know, but it's just an interesting story. And every once in a while, people come up to me and say, oh, that was funny on the radio, and that was funny, and oh, that was a good show. I'm getting it even more now that I'm doing podcasting, and to me, that's odd, because people are saying, hey, I heard the podcast, and I go, wow, how do you know that? I'm not on your car radio. So, I mean, it's just exploding. I mean, I think that we have more listeners on the internet now than we did when we were doing a broadcast radio on the car radio. So I'm pleasantly pleased. I hope you are. If you have any suggestions of what you want me to do other than shut up, let me know by going to MetroSouthPodcasting.com and shoot me an email and let me know what you think and what you would like and all that kind of stuff. And I probably won't do it, but it's just kind of a nice gesture on my part, I suppose. Other than that, it's of no consequence whatsoever. I ain't doing what you asked me to do. Well, I might if it's a good idea. If it's not a good idea, I'm not going to do it. Seriously, I mean, what the hell do you think's going on here? Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back tomorrow with more program. Until then, I wish you peace. I really do. You're wonderful people. You know what? I'm going to switch it up today for the closing theme. Let's switch it up. Let's go back in time a little bit here.